when you think about your user and their experience on Facebook or Instagram, think about what is going to stand out. Think about who they are, speaking to them in the right way, and then grabbing their attention with a captivating image or headline, something that's going to grab their attention, and then also entice them to take that action that you want them to take.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust, too, that you enjoyed our most recent interview, episode 200, with Neil Sperling, the world-class connector and problem solver. Wasn't that awesome? And also my reflections on 200 episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Monica Louie, who's a Facebook and Instagram ads strategist and also host of her own podcast, Flourish to Seven Figures. Monica works with online entrepreneurs who want a frustration-free Facebook ads experience. She offers a step-by-step rinse and repeat Flourish with Facebook ads program, as well as done-for-you ads management services and training programs, all focused on your audience first so that your ads can reach them easily and quickly with a high return on your ad spend. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP for the very important person that you are. Go check it out. It's free to join. And if you're a member already, just log in to get access to your resources. In our discussion today, Monica talked to me about setting ambitious goals and how to make them compelling for you, keeping that vision in front of you. She told me about the three key areas for the success of your Facebook or Instagram ad campaigns, and we discuss the importance of understanding your target audience, understanding their pain points, their needs, and how you specifically can help them. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Monica Louie. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Camas, Washington in the USA, Monica Louie, who's a Facebook and Instagram ad strategist, and she's also host of the Flourish to Seven Figures podcast. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Monica. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Kayla Sloan, who was our guest on episode 186 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you and introduced us. So a big hello to Kayla.
Yes. Hi, Kayla. Thank you.
Monica, now you help businesses and people build ads that connect with their audience and win their attention and trust and have them taking action to work with you. So with the business that is doing the advertising. Now, I'm really looking forward to learning more about that today. Facebook ads and Instagram ads and all things advertising. But before we get onto those things, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Sure. So I actually started off, with my corporate career, as many of us do after college, and started going down that route. I thought that I would work at that company I was working at for 40 years or so until I was ready to retire. And I thought I'd get really good at that one thing. And then when I got married and we started to plan to have our family, that's when I realized that my priorities were starting to change. And commuting and the, you know, 50 plus hour work week just wasn't falling in line with my goal of, you know, spending time with my new baby. So when my husband and I got married and we had our son, that's the first time that I realized that I wanted more flexibility in my schedule, that I wanted to have more control over my schedule. So we ended up starting to work toward a plan so that I could eventually leave my job. So I ended up going back full time after my maternity leave, but then did that for a few months and then was able to transition to part time. And then I worked part time for a year. And we were trying to be really smart about building up our savings and preparing for me to leave my job. And by the time that I had worked part time for a year, my husband had gotten a promotion and we kind of were looking at the numbers and we felt like everything was kind of falling into place, that it was a good time for me to leave. And also I was pregnant with our daughter by that time. So I ended up leaving my corporate job in May of 2013. And, you know, we were just really trying to be smart about it. And we felt very nervous, though, about going from two incomes down to one, because it was only a few years after, you know, the Great Recession. And we just felt very vulnerable and intentionally making that choice. So a couple months in, we realized that our savings that we had built up had started to dip ever so slightly. But with me being pregnant and, you know, me wanting to go down this path of being home with my kids while they were little, we just knew that, you know, I didn't want to go back to or have to go back to my job. So I ended up diving into the personal finance world. And that's where we learned about families who are similar to ours, who were not just staying afloat with their finances, which is what I was trying to figure out, but who were also paying off massive amounts of debt really quickly. And so we got inspired to pay off all of our debt. And so we decided that if we, you know, didn't have any debt, including, so we had student loans, we had a home equity line of credit, and we had our mortgage, that if we didn't have any of that debt hanging over our head, then we would feel so much more in control of our finances. And, you know, if anything did happen to my husband's job, that we would just feel much more, you know, I guess much less vulnerable, but just much more in control. So that's what we started to do, is we started to go down that path of paying off all of our debt, including our mortgage. And so we ended up in 2 years paying off $120,000 of debt and on a single middle-class income. Yeah. And that's when I had started to learn about blogging, because I knew that staying at home, I wanted to build a business from home that I could, you know, create on my own schedule and build up as the kids got older and started getting into school and I had more time on my hands. And so that's when I started learning about blogging and online business. So with that, since we were having this incredible story of paying off the debt really quickly and people were asking us how we were doing it, I ended up starting my personal finance blog in 2015. And from there, I just fell in love with the online business world. And that's when I learned about Facebook ads. So by the end of 2016, I ended up selling my blog because I had done my own Facebook ads and people were starting to reach out for my help with their Facebook ads. And we were getting really great results with all kinds of different campaigns. And I was working with all different kinds of clients at that point. So at the end of 2016, I sold my blog and transitioned to doing Facebook ads coaching and consulting. And then I built my online course in 2017 and then started growing my ads agency at the end of 2017. And now we have all three branches of the business, and it's been a wild, but a really joyous ride. Lots of fun growing this business.
Yeah. Isn't it wonderful in this day and age that people can make those choices to be at home with their family, raise a family and spend that time with their family, but at the same time develop a business that kind of doesn't interfere with that. It's not the, okay, I have to go to the corporate 9 to 5 and I might have to stay later to finish the work I'm doing or attend meetings, or I might have to travel a lot and be away for weeks on end, which was my corporate story. But these days you can actually have both. You don't have to make those sacrifices.
Exactly. And, you know, and if I choose to, because I do have a lot of travel coming up with conferences I'm attending, but those are choices that I've made for myself, you know, and if I'm going to work late, then that's a choice that I've made for myself. And, you know, but I really love having that control over my schedule, and I get to work in so that, you know, I can be at those important family functions and events and, you know, my kids' performances and whatever it is. So, but I really like that I have that control over my schedule, that I don't need to ask anybody's permission whether I can be there or not.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you recently, I mentioned that you're the host of the Flourish to Seven Figures podcast, And recently you did an episode on setting big, hairy, audacious goals. And I was going to explore with you, because obviously goal setting is something that you do quite a bit, because what you described there about getting rid of debt and being home for the family, all of those were goals that you set yourself and then you set out how to achieve them. We've just come from a business retreat in Fiji where we've set up plans for the next 12 to 18 months for a bunch of businesses about, achieving awesome results, and goal setting was a big part of that. So I'm interested to learn from you how you kind of approach the goal setting.
Yeah. So I started off with, developing SMART goals. So specific, measurable, actionable, realistic, time-bound goals. But now, I really like to dream big. And so setting those big, scary goals. So I like to just, think about what is possible and can I make it possible? And it might seem impossible right now, but if I don't push myself to try and make the impossible become possible, then I know that I'll be limiting myself. If I try and set a safe goal that is realistic, then I know that's the fastest way to limit my potential. And I really think that, mindset has a lot to do with it, that if we allow ourselves to dream big and think about, all the possibilities of what we could possibly achieve, or even just get creative with, what is possible? What, is there a way that we can make this happen? When we start to ask those kinds of questions, and that's where we can get really creative as to how, it might sound crazy at first, but how we can actually make it happen. And so I think that shooting, the saying, shoot for the moon, because even if you miss, you'll still land among the stars. I absolutely love that. Because I think that's so true. With our debt freedom journey, we decided that we were going to pay off $320,000 of debt in 8 years on a single middle class income. And we didn't even stop to do the math and figure out, well, how much debt is that per year? And, is that realistic? Do we have that much left over? And we certainly didn't. But because we set that huge audacious goal, then that allowed us to get creative as to what we could do to at least start to build momentum toward that goal. And we decided that, even if we didn't hit that goal, if it took us, 10 years or 12 years even, that we would still be a lot farther having, been shooting for that big audacious goal than if we were to just kind of continue to go through the motions of what we thought was realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. What I really love about that is you start with the end in mind. So, paying off $320,000. So you don't start with, well, how much can I pay off? What does the maths look like? What do we have spare from, the day-to-day living expenses that we can pay into debt? You start off at the outcome and then work your way back. Okay, what do I need to do, or what do we need to do to get to that outcome?
Yeah. And then absolutely, know also that you're not going to know every step of the way, especially with a big goal or a long-term goal like that. You're not going to know every little detail of how that's going to happen. You can start with maybe a general idea of the path you might take, but just know that life always has its, turns and surprises. And when we started off with that goal, there were opportunities that came our way that we couldn't have foreseen that allowed us, allowed my husband to work extra overtime so that we could bring in more money faster, that helped us toward that goal. So there are always going to be things that can help you along that journey that you just can't foresee. And then there, of course, will be obstacles. But if you try and, foresee what those obstacles could be and create a plan around those ahead of time, then that'll get you better prepared. But just know that, especially when you're shooting for a big, scary goal like that, that especially a long-term one, that if you just start going all in and building that momentum, that'll get you a lot farther than, just trying to go the slow and steady, realistic route.
Yeah. Yeah. And so being flexible is really key there, is what I'm taking away from that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And open to possibilities, obviously. I'm interested, how do you kind of keep the goal that you set for yourself, how do you keep it compelling, and how do you visualize in your mind what the outcome looks like? So that, because when you do have those setbacks, this happens to all of us, you kind of get a little bit demotivated, frustrated, and some people get derailed from going towards their goal at that point. So how do you keep it compelling and keep a kind of a vision of what the outcome looks like, so that when you do have those setbacks, you say, well, that's all right. I'll just adapt, whatever it might be. I'll do what it takes and move forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen, especially if for a long-term goal or something that like it feels like it really is completely out of reach, that you might not be as far along as you thought you would be at this point. So keeping your eye on the prize, you know, beginning with the end in mind, you know, thinking about what life will be like once you hit that goal, really getting a clear vision of what achieving that goal is going to allow for you. And so having that compelling why, you know, reason why it is important for you to achieve that will help you keep focused on the outcome. But then also something that I really like to do is to look at how far we've come. So especially when we were getting out of debt, I would track not only how much debt we were able to pay off each month. And sometimes, you know, we were able to put a big payment towards the debt, and other times we just paid the minimum amounts that we had to. But I always looked back at, okay, we started our debt-free journey in August of 2013. And so since then we've paid off X amount of debt. And so already I see that larger number. I see how much we already have under our belt, how much progress we've already made, even though, you know, we still have so far to go. Just looking at the progress we've made and feeling very proud of that, that has always helped us to keep going. So no matter what the goal is, whether it's a revenue goal in your business, you know, if you can see how much progress you have made, and then that can help you keep going. And then also look at for other areas in your life. Maybe you're tackling something that you've never done before, which is common in business. And so maybe you look at other areas. Well, what are other things, other challenges that I have conquered where I really didn't know if I was going to be able to do it, but I was able to actually do it and I surprised myself? You know, look at those other wins that you've accomplished in your life.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of great advice in that. And I always encourage people to really dig deeply into that, because there's a lot around the five success principles in what you're sharing there, which is, you know, beginning with the end in mind, taking massive action, sensory awareness, so being aware of what's happening, measuring how far you've come, looking at what's ahead, looking at the potential risks and developing plans to mitigate those or to actually bypass them even better, and then having the behavioral flexibility to take those opportunities or change direction where it's appropriate. And then the whole idea of the psychology and physiology of excellence, which is what you talked about in mindset. So, you know, it's all encompassed in that. So thanks for sharing your philosophy on goal setting with us. So I'd like to move on now to your other area of expertise, which is Facebook ads and also Instagram ads. I'm sort of keen to learn a little bit more about Instagram ads as well, because I think sure. Instagram seems to be a platform that's growing in use and opportunity at the moment. So let's start with what are the keys to success when you're doing advertising on one of those platforms?
Sure. So there are three pillars that lead to a high converting campaign. So if your campaign is falling short or not getting the results that you're looking for, then there's probably a disconnect in at least one of these three areas. And this goes for Facebook ads or Instagram ads. But the first one is where you have to have an amazing offer. So whatever you're presenting in the ad, whether it's a video that you just want people to watch, or you are offering your free lead magnet so that you can grow your email list, or you're promoting a webinar, or even a blog post, whatever that offer is, it has to be something amazing. It has to be something that people actually want. And then you've got to get that offer in front of the right people. So the second element is to get it in front of the right audience. And with Facebook and Instagram ads, we have a whole bunch of different possibilities there of audiences that we can create. And so that's one of the great things is that, you know, there are billions of people on Facebook and Instagram. And so we can find our target audience most likely on at least one of those platforms. And then the third piece is the ad. So the ad has to be eye-catching. It has to grab attention, because when you think about Facebook, When you think about Instagram, there's a lot going on there, especially on Facebook. We have all our notifications. We're getting, you know, we have a group post. We have our friends and family posts. We have posts from pages we like. We, you know, have a lot of things going on, a lot of different distractions, really, all within that one app that are vying for our attention. And so when you think about your user and their experience on Facebook or Instagram, think about what is going to stand out. Think about who they are, speaking to them in the right way, and then grabbing their attention with a captivating image or headline, something that's going to grab their attention, and then also entice them to take that action that you want them to take.
Okay. Yeah. You mentioned the noise element there. I mean, there's a couple of things I'd like to explore further on that, but sort of the first one that triggered something in my mind, the noise element. I've gone on a real Facebook diet recently. I used to be in hundreds of groups probably. And of course I sort of watch family and friends and people are traveling right now. It's winter in Australia, so a lot of my friends are traveling overseas in the Northern Hemisphere where it's warmer. And so it's nice to see their photos and live vicariously through their experiences. But I've gone on a little bit of a Facebook diet because it just seems to have gotten so noisy recently. And there's so much stuff that comes through that's just not relevant to me. So, and I wonder whether, you know, that's a trend or whether that's just me. How do you, as an advertiser on that platform, how do you kind of combat that? How do you cut through that noise?
Well, so having an attention grabbing ad, so that could be, you know, an interesting image or a GIF or a video that just grabs attention. It could be something that's surprising. So really the visual element is usually going to be what grabs attention first, but it could also be the headline, that maybe you've got a surprising headline or you've got, you know, a different take that's kind of, you know, opposite of what the general thought is around your topic. So something along those lines can really grab attention. And then also pay attention to the first line in your ad copy. So the ad copy is the text above the image or video in your ad. And so especially if you have longer ad copy, that first line can really be the attention grabber and the hook that draws people into reading the rest of your ad. So make sure that you're speaking to the right people with that first line so that they want to continue to engage with your ad and then click through and take that action that you want them to take.
Mm. So good copywriting and good image what I'm hearing a key. How do you find the effectiveness of, say, using animated GIFs or videos versus a static image?
Yeah, so they can work really great for conversion campaigns. So that's where we want to drive traffic, to have somebody opt in to something. If we're just driving traffic to a blog post, we still find that static image ads work the best. So we've tested videos, we've tested GIFs, but we still, if we're driving traffic to just a blog post, we find that the static image ads work the best because we want people to just engage with the ad enough where the ad piques their curiosity, but we want them to actually spend their time engaging with the blog post. When we're offering a lead magnet, then GIFs can work really well. Boomerang videos that you can easily make on your phone, or even just short videos, or carousel ads where you have multiple images or videos that will intrigue the user to kind of scroll through and engage the content. Those can work really well. But then also, you know, to your point earlier about with so much noise on the platform, take some time and actually scroll through your newsfeed and pay attention to what piques your interest, what actually grabs your attention. Is it, you know, an image that's kind of intriguing or a little bit different than all the other images coming through your feed? Is it the way that they structured the headline in the ad? Or maybe it's not even an ad. Maybe it's just somebody's post or an article that somebody shared. So pay attention to what you actually engage with on Facebook and Instagram, and then take those elements and incorporate them into your ads.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. Model off what's getting your attention and kind of analyze that a little bit in terms of why did that capture your attention. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other things you mentioned, and this is a big kind of, it's a big thing for me really, getting in front of the right audience. And, you know, we whether it's marketing or whether it's putting videos out there or even a podcast, and of course advertising, getting in front of the right audience, because people don't in general kind of ignore that aspect. And I'm always about, you know, knowing who your audience is, knowing who your ideal client is, and do a lot of work on developing and helping people really build a picture of who that is. So how do you approach that in terms of the Facebook and Instagram ads?
Yeah, that's something that's really important. I mean, as you said, it's super important to understand your audience, and especially with what we do, where we are, when we acquire a new client, then we start working with them. We want to make sure that we are being authentic and representing that brand well. And so we want to understand their audience as well as they do. And we want to speak to them in the right way. And so the process that we go through is Donald Miller's story brand script process.
Yeah.
So we love that book. I read it for the first time last summer, and then I bought copies for my entire team, and we started implementing that process. So every time we start working with a new client or even with a new offer for that client, we go through this process so that we can first, you know, understand the avatar, but then also go through in how to position the offer, whatever that may be, in the way that where it's obvious for the avatar that this is the best solution for you. And so we absolutely love going through that process. And we do that for each of our clients when we're promoting an offer, like, eventually a paid product. So we'll start with a sales funnel usually that has a free offer at the beginning, but then we want to build a relationship throughout the funnel so that we can present the paid offer later on. And so we go through that process so that we can speak to the audience in the right way, but then also think about, you know, different angles of that audience. You know, maybe one angle of the audience is stay-at-home moms, and then maybe another angle of the audience is just, you know, millennial young women who are looking for a side hustle. So what are the different areas of their avatar, and then how can we speak to them?
Yeah. I love the story brand process by Donald Miller. So I will have a link to his book in the show notes, because that's something that I make use of quite a bit. We've adapted it a little bit, but it really is a good framework for understanding the ideal audience, but then building a message that will actually compel them to take some action, actually resonate with them, and get action from them.
It helps you think about their pain points too, you know. So what is the solution that your offer is providing? And maybe it's a solution that they didn't realize they needed until you pointed out to them. So, you know, think about, really put yourself in your avatar's shoes and think about how you can position your offer or how you can create an offer even that will help solve one of their problems.
Now, you mentioned kind of the sales funnel area, and one of the things I see quite a bit is a lot of the advertising is directly for a product or service, and I wonder how that works compared to going to something that is a trust building step, like a free webinar or a blog post, and then what are the steps to take after that, because building this advertising platform, but building the whole system from getting the attention right through to making the sale, everything has to be consistent right through the way, and often things break down somewhere in that path. So how do you first of all, what's your view on advertising product directly versus going through the different steps, and secondly, how do you make sure that everything is really consistent if you do go through those steps?
Yeah. So when advertising a product directly, you know, a lot of times people will think that, oh, now I have a product. Now I need to just get it in front of more people and then I'll sell more. And so I'm going to use Facebook ads to promote my product directly. And in some cases that can work beautifully, but in other cases you do need to create that funnel where you're building that relationship with your target audience so that they know that you are the person that has the solution, they can trust you, and that, you know, your offer is the best solution for them. So it really depends on, you know, where you are in your business and being able to bridge that gap. So if you have a product that is really well known in your niche. Like one of our clients has an amazing software product. It's really well known in his niche, and it's just super high quality product. He has thousands and thousands and thousands of happy customers. And so we have found that we don't need a long sales process or sales funnel in order to make sales with ads. We generally have the best success with retargeting his warm audiences already, who are already showing an interest in his product. They're already checking out his sales page for his product. And then we bring them back to the sales page with the ads. And so that has worked out beautifully. We've been working with him for well over a year now, having great results with that strategy. I worked with another client where he has a really, really engaged, highly engaged, warm audience, large warm audience. And so he was doing a special promotion for just a few days of one of his courses. And so we worked together to show ads to people that were in his audience who had already shown an interest in his course or were in the proper stage of their business in order to take advantage of his course. And so we were very selective in the audiences that we ran ads to, and we were able to have a great return on investment to use ads at a low ad spend to make sales for his course during that, you know, 3 or 4 day window. So that can work really well when you've already done the work up front to build that audience. People already know about you and your product and are already showing interest. But in most cases, what we find works the best is that we do need to get in front of people and build up that relationship and establish that know, like, and trust factor. And so we can do that with a sales funnel. So that can be with a start of a free offer. So we offer a free webinar in some cases. Sometimes it's a, you know, video training series. Sometimes it's a live training series. Sometimes it's, you know, a PDF download, something where we're giving them that quick win. We're going to establish our expertise and that we can help them solve this problem and build the relationship with them before we actually present what the paid offer is. So we start to build that relationship. And then if you're doing a webinar, then maybe you make the offer at the end of the hour-long webinar. If you're offering a free download, then maybe you make the offer after an email series that helps to continue to build that relationship over time. And so that can work a lot better, especially when growing your warm audience. So if you're starting off where you don't have that large engaged audience, then you want to spend your time actively growing your warm audience and building that relationship with people so that they know that when they're ready to take advantage or take the next step to solve their problem, that you've got the perfect solution for them.
So I guess the fundamental thing there is that the trust and the relationship bit is really key, and you can do advertising directly for a product or service if your target audience is one that you already have a relationship with in some form or other. They might have been on the sales page, they might already be in your email list, they might already be customers of another product.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Right. And you can do both strategies at the same time as well. So as you can bring back the warm audience to your paid offer, as you're also, you know, have campaigns going to build up the trust and relationship with the people who are new to you and your brand.
All right. One of the things that I know you're very strong on is looking at the return on investment of the ads and the strategy. And so I'm curious, what would you say is a good conversion rate for an ad in terms of click through, but then actual conversion to a sale?
That really depends on a lot of different factors. So what is the price of the product? I mean, we're always looking at, you know, what is the return on investment? What is the potential return on investment? And so, and then what do we think we can bring in leads for? So if it's a very niche offer, then, you know, we're a very just small group of people are going to be interested then our cost per lead will likely be higher than if it's an offer that is general for the masses that a lot of people are going to be interested in. So that's where the price of the paid offer on the back end can have a big factor, you know, make a big determination on whether it's going to be profitable or not. So we've worked with clients where we have, you know, where it's a very niche industry that they're in, but on the back end, they're selling a high level coaching program that is, you know, multiple four figures for that offer. So we don't have to have as many conversions in order for that to be a profitable campaign. But, you know, we've got a very select industry that we're speaking to. So on the other end, you know, we can have lower priced offers that can work really well when we have a larger pool of people who are interested in that offer.
Okay. So I guess when you first started with the Facebook ads, you were sending people to your blog posts?
So when I first started, I was with my first campaigns for my blog, I was driving traffic to my free webinars. A strategy that I've done a lot is working with bloggers, driving traffic to their blog posts, to their monetized blog posts.
And so what's the monetization part of the blog post? Because I guess driving traffic to the blog post in and of itself is a little bit of a vanity goal or metric to me, but unless the blog post is actually then leading on to the sale somewhere.
Yes. So a lot of times we'll do this with our blogging clients where their monetization strategy is mostly through affiliate marketing and then ad network. So display ads on their website. And so every time they bring a visitor to the site, whether it's through, you know, Google or Pinterest or, you know, Facebook ads, they know that they're bringing in revenue. And so a lot of times we will look at the blog posts that are monetized well. So that means usually that they have affiliate offers throughout the blog post that are converting well already. And then they might also have display ads so that they know that anytime that blog post is viewed, they're making money. And so that can be a really great combination for us to drive traffic to. And in most cases, we're able to get super cheap targeted traffic to those blog posts and see that return on investment. So it depends on what the affiliate offer is and how much they're making through the ad networks. But we'll like to see if we can narrow in on what is the revenue per page view for that blog post. And then we know that anything under that, that we're driving traffic to via Facebook ads, that is less than that, that we're making profit. And of course, you know, the wider that spread, then the more profitable that strategy is going to be.
All right. So the other thing following on from return on investment is testing and optimization of ads. So what do you suggest in terms of the time frame to run an ad for on those platforms? What would you say is a minimum time frame that you should be looking at for a campaign?
Yeah. I like to start tests and let them run for at least 3 to 4 days before making any changes or judgments on whether or not it's performing, because the algorithm needs time to really learn, to gather data and learn about who is engaging with the ad, who's actually taking the action that we want them to take. And then the algorithm will help us show the ad to people who are more likely to take that action. But it does need at least a couple of days worth of data in order to start to narrow in on showing the ad to those people. So we obviously, when we're creating the campaign, we will select which audiences we want Facebook to show the ad to, but then Facebook even dives deeper where the algorithm will look at the people within those audiences who are engaging, and then it'll start to prioritize showing the ad to those people who are more likely to take that action.
So how many versions of the ad would you be running to kind of do those tests?
So that depends on what the client's budget is. So we will work with clients with a variety of different budgets, but the more that we have to work with budget-wise, and the more tests we can run up front, and then the faster we can learn and get going. But I've got students in my program who start running ads with $5 or $10 a day. So even if you have a small budget, if you're just, you know, starting to learn about Facebook ads and you just kind of want to test the waters, you can get going and start getting great results with as little as $5 or $10 a day. For my, you know, clients that hire us for ads management, then we generally like to start off with larger budgets so that we can, you know, dive in and get some more tests under our belt. But when working with limited budgets, I usually like to start by testing a variety of different audiences first with one version of the ad, and then I'll take my learnings about which audiences resonated with the ad, and then I'll take my best performing audiences and then start to test different versions of the ad from there.
Okay. Now, with Instagram, I'm not familiar with Instagram advertising yet. So do they have ad testing and campaigns and audience, defining audiences similar to what Facebook does?
Yes, it's all within the Ads Manager platform. And so it's all in the same place. And then you just select where you want your ad to appear, whether you want it to appear on Facebook and Instagram or just Facebook. You can specify if you want it to show in the Instagram feed or the Facebook news feed or Instagram stories or Facebook stories now. We have a lot of different options there. But then I always like to, you know, pay attention to where is the ad going to appear and does it make sense for the platform? So we'll usually, if we're going to test both Facebook and Instagram ads, then we will separate those into separate campaigns because we like to design the ad, even though they might be similar, we like to design the ad specific to each platform. Because on Facebook in the newsfeed, we've got a headline, which is that larger text underneath the image or video. But on Instagram, we don't have a headline. We just have the ad copy and the image or video.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I remember now that there is an option in Facebook ads to pick displaying on Instagram. So I guess that brings up another question, and it probably is there a better platform to go to? It probably depends very much on your target audience and where they hang out. But the other one that I'm curious about is the use of stories versus just the feed.
What's
your take on that?
So to answer your first question, it definitely depends on, you know, which platform is going to work best. It definitely depends on where your audience is hanging out. With most brands that we work with, we know that their audience is on Facebook. And then it's a question of, do we also think that they're on Instagram? And sometimes we might be surprised that, you know, we might think that, oh, this is going to do great on Instagram and then it doesn't, or the other way around where we're like, well, let's test Instagram and see. We're not really sure if the audience is there, but let's test it and then we can be pleasantly surprised. And then sometimes we'll have two different offers. So we have a client where we have two different offers and the audience for each offer or the avatar for each offer is pretty similar. However, one offer does really great on Facebook and the other offer does really great on Instagram. And it doesn't mean that we don't offer the offers on the other platforms. It's just that we will allocate more of the ad spend, you know, on the platform that is working, obviously. So anyway, I want to say that because it can always be worth testing. If you think that your audience is potentially on Instagram, then I would test it. If your audience is or your offer is like in, you know, very visual, then Instagram is a great place or for women. But also, I mean, more and more men are engaging on Instagram as well. So I wouldn't discount if your audience is primarily men. So be open to that too. But then as far as Instagram feed ads versus Instagram stories, I love testing both. And I find that either one can work really well for a conversion campaign. So that's where we want to drive traffic and get that opt-in. So whether it's for, you know, to grow the email newsletter or to promote our free webinar to get people into our sales funnel, whatever it is, we find that Instagram as a platform in and of itself converts better for that strategy, as opposed to driving traffic to monetize blog posts, just because at least right now, and this could always change, but at least right now, people aren't used to clicking through and digesting a blog post as they're engaging on the Instagram platform, but they're definitely used to doing that on Facebook. So we find that for the traffic strategy to blog posts, that Facebook is the best platform for that.
Hmm. All right. It was a fascinating topic. I could go on talking for ages, but I did want to explore a little bit more about some of the aspects of how you've taken this information, because obviously you've built processes for creating your own ads and then expanded that to a process to create ads for other people. And then you've brought a team on board to help you grow the business so that you're still the entrepreneur and other people are now doing a lot of the creation of the ads for other people and other businesses, and then turn that into an online course. So talk us through that process a little bit. Was that a conscious process or did you just recognize opportunities as you were doing bits and pieces?
Yeah, I mean, it really was the latter. So I started off When people started reaching out for me to help them with their Facebook ads, at first people were saying, you know, I want you to do it for me. And I was like, well, you know, I'd rather teach you so that you understand what goes into creating the campaign. And then you can, you know, do it yourself and you don't need to rely on me to do it for you and, you know, pay me each and every month. So that's why I started off with coaching and consulting and teaching. And then as demand grew for my coaching services, that's when I saw the need to create my online course so that I could help more people and really put out my system and process for creating campaigns that convert. And so that's when I created my online course that has now helped over 500 people have great success with their Facebook ads. And then from there, people started reaching out and wanted to work with me, but they didn't want me to teach them how to do it or me to teach their VA how to do it. They really wanted me to just do it for themselves. And so these were people that had successful businesses already that I knew were in the stage of their business where, yeah, of course it made sense for them to outsource this and they didn't need to be in the ads manager, you know, duplicating ad sets and creating new ad iterations. Mm. And so that's when I decided to start to grow my team and teach my team members how to replicate my process and what I look for and how I analyze, you know, whether campaigns are converting or if we need to set up new tests. And then from there, we just started to build our processes and really put into, you know, detail about what I look for and how we can manage ads in you know, with integrity for other people and represent their brands well. And so it kind of took my process that was in my course, but then also put that into working with clients. So that's what we've been able to build out. And I'm really proud of my team and what we've built. And now we've been able to have other team members train other team members. And it's been really a great experience and a lot of fun for me. And, you know, and just I'm really proud of what we've built and all that we're doing and helping online entrepreneurs have more success with Facebook and Instagram ads.
Mm, yeah. And it sounds like there's a lot of people that you're helping with that, which is, I mean, to me, that's always a sign of success if it's financially viable and you're, you know, helping a lot of people transform their businesses and make a success of their businesses. All right. Well, this has been absolutely fascinating, Monica. I really appreciate you sharing all that information with us. I think it's time we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and tips that will inspire the listener to go away and do something awesome today.
Sure. So let's do it.
What's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think it comes back to understanding your target audience and really understanding their pain points. What do they need? What are the solutions that they need? What solutions do they need that maybe they aren't even aware of? And so really getting in the shoes of your target audience and looking at the world through their eyes and figuring out creative ways that you can help them.
Hmm. Great advice. And of course, I'm a big fan of getting to know your target audience and your ideal client and the solutions and their needs. And as you say, often there's, you know, if you really understand the pain points and kind of can walk in their shoes, then there's opportunities there that they may not even know they need and things that you can help them with. Okay, what's the best thing you've done to develop new products or new ideas?
So I love reading books. I love listening to podcasts. I love learning, but I also know that in order to develop new ideas, that I need space to think and process and, you know, think about the solutions that I can help my students and my clients with. So making sure that I have thinking time has been really helpful in order to come up with those new ideas.
Hmm. Is there anything specific you do to give yourself that space for thinking time?
Well, I've been so used to that when I'm driving or getting ready or eating lunch that I will always have, you know, a podcast or audiobook playing. And so I've just begun to be more conscious and aware that, you know, this could be some good thinking time for me to think about those creative ideas and solutions that I can share, you know, on my podcast or with my students. Or with my clients. And so I've just become more mindful of giving myself that space.
Hmm. All right. And what's one of the resources that you use most often?
Oh, for anything specific or just?
Just in your business or, yeah.
Oh, well, one resource that we use all the time is Zoom for meetings. So client meetings, team meetings. And then also I'll give you another one, Asana. So that's our project management tool that where we keep everything, every little detail in the business, we keep it organized in Asana.
Hmm. All right. Well, we use both of those here as well. So I'm familiar with those. We'll have links to those in the show notes, of course, so people can check them out. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track when you're working with them?
Yes. So we have a checklist to start when we start working with a new client. So that helps us keep all organized, that we are getting all the information, details, assets, anything that we need to get going with the ad creation, and then also deadlines. So we let the client know that if we've got, you know, a firm deadline that we need to get this campaign up and running, so, you know, for their next launch or something, that we have specific deadlines on where we need the information from them.
Hmm. Okay. That's good. I love checklists. And Asana, in a way, is built on checklists in some ways.
Yes. Yes.
All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
So I think niching down, getting very specific with who it is you serve and how you serve them. And so when I started, since I started off in the personal finance space with my own blog, when I started doing Facebook ads, I mean, I just kind of happened to do this by accident where I started off working with personal finance bloggers, since that's who I was and that's where my network was. But that really helped me to get very clear on how to best serve those clients. And then once I was very, I mean, and then that also through word of mouth, my business was able to grow really quickly in that space. But then also that helped me to build up the confidence. And so once people started reaching out that were outside of that niche, I felt confident that I could help them as well.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And it's people are sometimes scared of niching down and narrowing their focus in terms of their target audience and who they can help. But I've found anytime someone does that, and anytime I do that, it actually expands the business, grows the business, gives it a spurt, because we're just so focused on who we serve best, and then you seem to connect with more of those people just by way of what you're doing. Hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, that still serves me to this day, even though not all of our clients are in the personal finance space, it's still people will hear my name through that community and reach out and know that I am the best person to help them, or, you know, I have the best team to help them, because that is our specialty. And that's where we started.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz, Monica, and thanks for sharing your information today. This has been really great. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared?
Yeah. So I'd love to offer my free Facebook ad starter kit to your audience, and they can find that at monicalouie.com/innovabuzz. Innovabuzz. Innovabuzz. Yeah, did I say it right?
Yeah.
And so they can find the free Facebook ad starter kit, and they can also find me through my podcast, Flourish to Seven Figures, and on Instagram, Flourish with Monica.
Great. We'll have links to all of those places in the show notes so people can check you out and also get a hold of that free Facebook ad starter kit, which sounds wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, now What's the number one piece of advice you'd give any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
So being an industry leader means sharing your own ideas. So make sure that you take the time to think of creative ways to explain whatever it is you teach. So there are, you know, a lot of different people probably teaching, you know, all the same things that you do, perhaps. But think about the creative way that you can teach it. And that's how you can really set yourself apart.
Hmm. Great suggestion. Yeah. So teaching other people what you know, but looking at a creative way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. All right. Well, finally, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Oh, I think my friend Christina Nicholson would be wonderful. She is the media maven. She's got an amazing podcast, and she teaches businesses how to get free publicity and how to profit from that publicity. So I think she'd be a great fit for your audience.
Sounds fascinating. So we'll reach out to Christina. We might get an introduction from you and get her on a future episode. Well, thanks again, Monica. This has been really wonderful. I've really enjoyed this episode and learned a lot more about Facebook ads and Instagram ads and how they fit together, and particularly, re-emphasized for me the importance of really understanding your audience and what they need and what you might be able to do for them and how to get through that noise in Facebook. So thanks again for sharing all that with us today. And I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for having me. This was an honor.
I hope you enjoyed that wonderfully engaging conversation with Monica and took something away from this episode. I love her goal-setting approach and also her clear articulation of what is important in understanding your target audience and how you can craft an ad that will stand out from the noise and get their attention. I'd love to know what you took away from Monica's interview. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Monica Louie. That is MonicaLouie. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Monica Louie. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Monica there, as well as links to her website, her free Facebook Ads Starter Kit, and the other resources we spoke about in the conversation. Monica suggested we interview Christina Nicholson, the media maven, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Christina, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Monica Louie. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Also, check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show. You can find that at talesofmarketingtransformation.com. And each episode of that show will provide one valuable message to guide you on your journey of marketing transformation. And of course, tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Sarah Ellison, social media trainer and consultant, and together on the same show, Dr. Annette Coy and Cameron Fee of the Cortex Group. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.